May it please the court. The question is, when a injured person is sent to a doctor, not for treatment, but for a, quote, independent medical examination, close quote, which I contend is an oxymoron, for the reason it's about as independent as the new Speaker of the House of the United States Congress. Here, I pleaded that the plaintiff was not a patient of the doctor, and that the doctor furnished plaintiff no health services, no medical treatment. The defendant answered, admitting both of those statements. And therefore, under sections
1. Is that the definition of patient, delivering health services or with the intent of treatment? The person appears before the doctor to get health services or for treatment. Is that part of your definition of patient?
He appeared in this case for neither.
No, I know, but that would be the definition of patient. If he was a patient, he'd be there to get health services or treatment. In this case, he was not there for that at all.
Yes, sir.
For evaluation.
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact.
And do you have where's that definition from?
Definition is not in the statute that
where
covers the
where
malpractice.
Else, where else? Black's Law Dictionary? Where else would you find that definition?
Well, the defendant in his brief quoted the dictionary, but I submit that where they admit that he wasn't a patient and that he got no health, he got no treatment, that it's moot.
Are there any health publications, any treatises in the medical field that defines what a patient is?
Not that I know, but I can tell you the defendant knew, because in the recording made of this IME, the plaintiff asked for a copy of his report, which by the statute he's entitled to get. And the doctor said, "You are not a patient." Now, if the doctor knows the plaintiff is not a patient.
The doctor said he wasn't a patient.
That's what he said in the examination. And if the defense lawyer admitted that he was not a patient, and if the defense lawyer admitted that he was not there to get treatment, I'm kind of standing here. If you remember, there was a vice president who was an independent candidate as vice president, and he stood up in front of the camera and he said, "Who am I and why am I here?"
Admiral Stockdale.
That's correct. I couldn't remember his name, but you remember his name and you remember the circumstances.
Counsel, it does say it was a medical exam, though. So how do you have a medical exam without having... opposing counsel says we're not asking if it's a doctor-patient relationship. We're saying during the course of the medical exam, medical in nature, you have a patient. You're a patient.
In the defendant's brief...
What are you if you're not a patient?
In the defendant's brief, they conveniently referred to the appearance as a medical exam, leaving out the word independent.
No, I understand, but nonetheless, what is the relationship then if it's not, if you're being examined by a doctor to determine your health in some regard? What are you except a patient?
In this case, you are a litigant who the defendant has hired a doctor to rebut the litigant's claims of injury.
I understand, but if an injury occurs to the person being examined by a medical professional, what is their relationship? You're saying there's no, what if it was a more intrusive kind of independent exam? They couldn't sue them for malpractice if they left a sponge in them or some other kind of injury? There has to be, in some circumstances, it seems like there would, in fact, even though you're not going for treatment, be a medical relationship.
The state law and the court rules require an injured plaintiff to appear for an exam. Okay, that relationship is an adversary proceeding of a plaintiff being examined by a defendant's doctor. There is no medical treatment provided. There is no medical advice. So it happens to be, in this case, a plaintiff being examined by a doctor.
The
and
Michigan,
that's it.
I'm sorry, excuse me. The Michigan Supreme Court examined, kind of a analogous situation, and they analyzed it by looking at, was the action of the doctor, was it something that involved medical judgment? Was the doctor's action something that involved medical judgment, as opposed to a doctor, you know, hitting a patient or abusing a patient sexually? You know, was this action medical judgment? How do you respond to that analysis?
I'm trying to find that case. I've got it here someplace. I didn't write down that it was Michigan. I, of course, read it, and let me see if I can find it. Do you know the name of the case, Judge?
I don't have it right in front of me.
I'm sorry?
I don't have it right in front of me, but...
Well, I'm sorry. I had it here.
Well, can you address why that's not a good test, regardless?
Just can you address that analysis? Is that appropriate for us to consider, looking at the doctor's action in this case?
Okay, I'm sorry. I was so busy looking for the case, I lost your question.
That's okay. The Michigan Supreme Court looked at the analysis. Was the action
looks
of
like
the
Dyer, D-Y-E-R.
Was the action of the court, of the doctor, something involving medical judgment?
Well, yes, and as far as the case that was cited by the defendant, when my secretary ran it, all we got was the Supreme Court's denial of transfer. So I can only take what the defense lawyer put in his brief as a statement.
Is that an appropriate analysis for us to use in this case?
Which says, did the IME doctor have a duty to perform the exam with skill and not injure the plaintiff? It was alleged that there was negligence based on medical malpractice and that the doctor could defend himself under the medical malpractice rules. So the analysis, I don't think, is quite the same, because the recording shows that the doctor said at one point, I'm going to stop tormenting you now. And this is a claim for assault and battery, not medical malpractice.
So was was the doctor using his medical judgment in his examination of this patient, his evaluation of this patient?
I'm sure he was. But he was giving nothing to the plaintiff in exchange for using his medical judgment.
What in the statute actually requires it to be the particular doctor's patient? The way I read the statute, it just defines, we don't have to go to the dictionary, because the statute defines healthcare services as any services that a healthcare provider renders to a patient in the ordinary course of the healthcare provider's profession. Well, we know that there's a lot of these doctors that maybe don't even practice a lot of medicine that do IMEs. Okay, so if he usually does IMEs in his regular course of his profession, because he's qualified to do based upon his medical school degree, the statute would seem to define that as healthcare services, just because he's got a medical degree and he does it in the usual course of his business. And it says a patient, it doesn't say his or her patient. This litigant at one time was a patient of some doctor.
Yes.
So what I don't understand is, why wouldn't we just look at the plain language of the statute and apply it in this case?
Because of the fact that the special relations set up here by the court rule and by the state statute of an examined person by a doctor is not the same as a patient doctor relationship.
Well, I agree, but I don't see in the statute that it requires it to be a doctor patient relationship. It just says a patient.
That's only in the first of the statutes that's covered, and as you go through the rest of the statutes, the situation is it talks only about healthcare services. The patient is in the first section, and that patient section is, I think it's 205. And then as you carry through the rest of the five sections, it all refers to health services. The word patient is not used.
Right. I understand that. But if healthcare services are defined as any services that a healthcare provider renders to a patient in the ordinary course of his business, what if a doctor just never saw patients of his own, but just did independent medical exams all day long?
That's done.
I understand it
is. Save a lot of money on Med-Mal insurance because you'd never need it, from what you're saying, because you'd never actually be subject to malpractice claims, only to assault claims.
That's probably true.
Is there any precedent for such a holding that you can cite to us?
The defendant put in his brief that they found no case like this in the United States of America. I found no case like this. The closest one that I could find was a Meekins case that I cited in my brief as the only basis for the case law in this case. Defendant interestingly commented on my case and said that there's no treatment there. All it was a blood test or the urine test. Well, what the defendant overlooked was that a doctor set up the criteria for that test. And whether it was administered by a lay person or by a medical professional, it doesn't make any difference.
Now, your client didn't have any kind of contractual arrangement with the IME. He was just told to go there to be examined. He had no contract for health care services, or he didn't pay for the doctor. He was just sent there for an evaluation. Is that correct?
That's correct. He received no bill. He received no advice. He asked for a copy of the report and was refused that, and the doctor then stated in the recording, "You're not my patient."
And he didn't give him a copy of the report?
No, but I got it eventually. But the doctor was becoming a lawyer and saying, "I don't give it to you, I give it to the insurance company defense attorney that hired me." And it's interesting enough, the statute says that the patient is a patient, that the person examined is entitled to get the report also. But
is payment required?
Sure.
Is payment required to have medical malpractice action?
Is what?
Is payment required in order for a
no,
medical?
No, not at all. Because hopefully, with 50 million people uninsured in America, I don't know what the Obamacare bill is going to change on that, but hopefully there will be treatment provided that you and I are eventually going to pay for with our taxes. So no, payment is not required. I think that's sufficient. Any more questions by the court? Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Robert J. Amsler, Jr., and I represent the respondent, Dr. Mitchell Rotman, in this case. And as the court knows, this evolved out of a lawsuit in Jefferson County out of a car accident. The defendant hired Dr. Rotman to perform an independent medical examination. He did so, and then claimed he was injured during this examination, turned around and now sues Dr. Rotman, too.
That is an error on motion to dismiss. What if the IME says, "I want you to move your arm this way, or I'm going to move your arm for you," and then the person getting the evaluation says, "That hurts, don't do that." And what happens if the doctor continues doing it? Or are there fact situations that on this motion to dismiss would take it outside of the quote-unquote medical situation and make it an assault and battery? We're here on a motion to dismiss.
No, I don't think this is an assault and battery. Under Missouri law, an assault and battery is either a physician performing treatment that is not what the patient bargained for, or he ends up giving a different treatment than he told the patient he was going to give. That's an assault and battery under a medical...
But if the patient says, "Stop, that hurts."
Right. Now...
What happens then? I mean, and the doctor keeps doing it, or what?
Actually, Dr. Rotman said, yes, he does do that a little bit further, and he explained in his deposition in the civil lawsuit involving the car accident, simply because he has to further test the shoulder to see how stiff it is and make an evaluation based on that. But Dr. Rotman also said it doesn't matter if it's a medical examination due to a court proceeding or if it's a medical examination because the guy's coming to me for treatment. You know, Dr. Rotman is a practicing orthopedist. He doesn't do IMEs all day. He does have a practice doing some, but he doesn't do it all the time. And he said he would have performed this examination no different on Mr. Dvitry than if the man had come to him for medical treatment outside of the lawsuit.
Is it necessary for Section 538.225 to apply that health care services were provided?
I believe the health care service was provided.
No, my question is, do you agree it is necessary that health care services must be provided?
Yes.
So So what is the effect of you admitting in your answer that healthcare services were not provided?
We admitted there was no physician-patient relationship.
You're saying you didn't admit that there were no healthcare services?
Not in the traditional sense, no. What you have here is a more limited application of the physician-patient relationship. The Michigan case, the Dyer case that one of the justices cited earlier, that talked about how there's a limited medical malpractice because the doctor's not seeing the individual to treat him overall. But if the doctor does come across something, the doctor does owe a standard of medical malpractice to meet the standard. What do other physicians do in the same or similar circumstances? He still has to meet that. The first case out of New Jersey Supreme Court, and while I could not find in the ordinary course in Missouri law, I did find it in the other cases that I cited. For instance, in New Jersey, the guy went in for a pre-employment physical. They sent him for a chest x-ray. The chest x-ray came back positive. And the question was, should the radiologist have marked it, rule out tuberculosis, or should he have said it is tuberculosis? He said it was. So right there in that case, you have the New Jersey Supreme Court saying there is a limited duty. The radiologist did owe a limited duty. Now, that eventually didn't apply because the duty was to another physician who ordered the test, not the patient. But that was the New Jersey case. And the Dyer case out of Michigan is just, 6 years ago? And it's the exact same thing as this. The doctor was performing a medical examination out of a car accident, believe it or not, to a shoulder, which is what we have in this case, too. And there they held that it was.
Is the question whether someone's a patient or not a question of law or a question of fact? Because you did admit in your answer that plaintiff was not a patient and did not seek treatment.
It's right. He was not a patient for treatment. But I do believe he's a patient under the dictionary definition because patient isn't defined in the statute.
But why did you admit in your answer in response? They allege in paragraph 3 that at no time was plaintiff ever a patient of defendants, and you said defendant admits that the plaintiff was not a patient in response to the allegations of paragraph 3 and did not seek treatment in response to the allegations of paragraph 4, but did present himself for an independent medical evaluation. So you kind of did raise this distinction.
Well, we did what we're trying to do by putting both the medical examination in there and denying that he's a patient is trying to deny that there was the traditional physician-patient relationship. But we were admitting he was going to get the medical exam.
Is that a question of law or a question of fact? Is that something you can admit or deny, or is that a question for the court, what constitutes a patient under the statute?
I think it's a question of fact when you get into why was he there. I don't think it's a question of law in that sense.
Now, does the patient... I know the patient puts himself in jeopardy by filing the action and opens up his health, and he has to sign whatever waivers are of confidentiality with the doctor. But then does that change the relationship, traditional relationship between a doctor and patient, in that the patient knows that whatever he says or does is not protected by a doctor-patient confidentiality?
And
therefore, the patient could assume this is an adverse relationship.
Well, I don't know what the patient would assume if this is an adversarial relationship, but there is no physician-patient relationship in the traditional sense. In fact, most doctors will tell you that what you say, I will be telling other people, and that's one of the reasons you're here. That's one of the things the doctor does. He has to take a history, and he does that whether he's coming for a medical examination or for treatment. Doctor's going to ask, what hurts? How'd you get hurt? How do you feel? Does this hurt now? So he has to take that information from the patient. So there is no traditional physician-patient relationship, but there is a relationship that arises out of the medical examination. And that's why I think a lot of the other court cases I cited, they talk about a limited duty in that extent.
In the Colorado Supreme Court, they had a really similar case, too, and that was exactly the situation here where they call the person a non-patient. Was injured in an automobile accident and came in for the IPE. And during the examination, there was some alleged injury. And the Supreme Court of Colorado said the physician was required to exercise the professional skill in examining the patient and ordering the test. So do we analyze this as a standard of care? Is that do we look at the standard of care of the action? Is that necessary in this type of suit?
I think if you look back at a couple of the appellate court cases in Eastern and Western Southern districts, I think the distinction they made applies here. It does this arise out of the of a medical doctor using his judgment, his skill, his professional training to work within his license and then come up with an answer? And they said, if it does that, then it's covered under the Malpractice Act. And of course, this court itself has said that, you know, that applies to more than just negligence cases involving physicians. This court has held it applies in Res Ipsa and that. So it applies not just in medical, the normal block you want to put that in. So I think what you have here is a physician using his care, his judgment, his skill, his professional expertise in coming at it. And that's the analysis I think both the New York and Michigan Supreme Courts applied. They're saying this isn't a case of the doctor, at least in this case, coming up and slugging someone. He was performing a medical examination, doing recognized medical tests. And I might add that he's the only person, him, an MD and a DO, that can provide a medical evaluation. In this state, they're the only two professions allowed by licensure to perform that, a medical examination. Nurses can't do it. Chiropractors can't do it. They do a chiropractic examination. They are not qualified to give a medical examination. Physical therapists are licensed, but they can't do this. Only a medical doctor can. And this court has more or less recognized that. In 1917, this court held in a case that the courts had the ability to order medical examinations. 1943, the legislature passed a bill, the governor signed, became a law, setting up this procedure. And this Supreme Court has ruled 60.01, which is out there because this is what physicians do. It recognizes that we use physicians every day in the legal process. You'll see them in will contests, competency hearings, criminal cases, and car accidents.
In a normal situation where medical services are rendered, physicians often ask patients to sign consent forms.
Yes.
I consent to you doing this or that to me and so on. Was there any type of form like that in this situation?
I do not know. That was not brought out.
Nothing in the record about that.
I don't believe there's anything in the record, except that the recording that Mr. Collins told his client to make, and he concealed the tape recorder in his clothing.
Was that concealed? Was that surreptitious, or was that just a recording?
I actually think, to be quite frank, that's just not allowed. There are two cases in Missouri law, one in which an attorney asked to be present at an IME, and it was held no. No, you're not allowed. You're not allowed. And someone else wanted to record it, and there's another Missouri case that says you can't record this. It impugns the idea of an independent medical examination if you send someone in there to do that. So I think, it's quite frankly, I thought it was dirty pool because you're not supposed to. There are two cases where this has not been allowed explicitly. And our doctor didn't know it. He never asked. He never told our doctor he was recording. And I might point out, though, if you go back and you look at the transcript, our doctor says, would you mind taking off your shirt? Mr. Dimitri said, yes, and he took off his shirt. Or I guess I should say no and took off the shirt. And then he moved his arm. He said, move your arm like this. And he did. And he said, let me move your arm. He gave him his arm. Now, the allegations are that the doctor moved the arm too far and injured him. But that's just the allegations. Still, Mr. Dimitri consented to each and every one of the tests the doctor said. And if you look at the tape recording that was taken during this examination, you'll see he never said, I'm stopping this examination. I don't want you to touch me anymore. I'm walking out. He never, ever revoked the consent to go. And I might add, this was a consensual examination. Opposing counsel asked Mr. Collins if he would agree to it. He did agree and sent his client. So there was consent by the plaintiff to attend this IME. And it was never revoked. He showed up and he complied with the request of the doctor. So I believe this was a medical treatment by a physician. I don't believe it's assault and battery because there was that consent to what happened. And if there's nothing else, I'll conclude. Thank you.
The Ratliff case that Judge Breckenridge wrote when she was at the Court of Appeals
denied a plaintiff the right to appear with his client at the IME, stating that the IME is not an adversary proceeding. Those that I, the office that practiced law for decades, know that sometimes the adversary proceeding is the worst possible in an IME. And here's what happens. Plaintiff has no way to prove what happened in the IME. Then the doctor prepares a report. Then the doctor is deposed, usually by the insurance company defense attorney, and that deposition is then played to the jury. The Ratliff case, the judges commented that the plaintiff has a way to correct that, and that is by testifying in rebuttal to the IME doctor's deposition. Judges, there is no way that a plaintiff is going to have any standing to be believed by a jury once a doctor's records have been read into evidence. And that is the last thing that is involved in a civil case. That's the last thing the jury hears. And when these IME doctors become advocates, and there is one doctor in St. Louis who has been criticized by the Missouri Court of Appeals twice as being an advocate and not a doctor, and nothing happened. Situation is this. Yes, that was a secret recording. Personally, I don't care when I talk to anybody or have anybody in my office. If they want to tape record it, doesn't bother me.
What if you get to trial, if we ruled in your favor and you get to trial, what do you believe is your client's burden of proving that the doctor did something improper that injured your client?
Two ways.
Can you do that without medical? Are you proposing that you are able to do that without expert testimony?
Yes. Two ways. One, by his own testimony, and two, by the recording. And those are correlations of what happened for everything in that conference.
So you're indicating that the doctor, there doesn't need to be an expert who can say what the doctor did was improper.
That's correct. Absolutely.
Because why?
Because we have a physical act that you can hear on the tape recording where the plaintiff screams in pain and says, don't do that, and the doctor says, I have to. And then we have the doctor's deposition.
And if you have, if defendant had a doctor that would testify that that's an appropriate way to respond to that medical situation, I don't know if they would or not, but would you not need a doctor to come back and say, no, that's inappropriate?
The doctor tried to say that in his deposition, that where a patient denies a range of motion, he has a right to push that joint past the range of motion. And the answer is, that's a jury question. You don't need a medical doctor.
Why isn't it a medical question?
Because
also,
the patient is the one that's feeling the pain. The doctor can't feel the pain. There's no way that you can prove the pain, except in this case, you can hear the scream on the recording.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, judges.
Case is taken under submission.